Let's join Matt Stringer, the Chief Executive of RNIB, for our weekly catch-up. A few topics to go through today, and thank you for joining us, Matt.
Hi, Alan. My pleasure as ever. Good to speak to you.
Now, we're going to take a look, first of all, at some news around health and new safety stuff to talk about.
We hosted a session in our London office on Monday with a variety of partners who've been involved in the publication of a report called The Safety Gap, authored by Professor Dr. Henrietta Hughes, who is the Patient Safety Commissioner in England. And basically this report, which runs to about 50 pages, and the subheadline is Safety and Accessibility of Medicines and Medical Devices for People with Sensory Impairment. And so this event had a combination of clinicians, academics, charities, so ourselves were there, and people like the RNID have been invited to this with their Diabetes Association were there as well. And it was a chance for an interesting room full of people for 90 minutes to have this sort of formally launched and published, and also then to prompt a conversation in the room, which then, as ever, led to a number of actions that we need to follow up now out of this. But you know, why is this important? Well, A, you've got someone like the Patient Safety Commissioner who occupies an important slot in the country, clearly focused on making sure patients are safe. And what this report goes into is really the campaign we've been running along with other charities for some time around the challenges of accessible information in a medical setting, whether that's information around appointments and other aspects of healthcare, or in this context, whether it's around, you know, the use of medicines and how you can safely and securely, you know, access your medicines and be know what your medicines are, as opposed to running the risk of taking the wrong medicine, not finding your medicine, or indeed a lot of wastage in the system if medicines aren't understood and then have to be disposed, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, a number of benefits to this, not only the safety benefit, but also actually the economic benefit of running a slicker process whereby the right medicines get in the hands of the right people, you know, the right accessible information around them. And this is just a strand that we've been working on quite hard as you and I have been. Lots of our insight is referenced in the footnotes of this report. As part of that extra effort we've been putting into the whole accessible information standards work, working with charity partners over couple of years really to make sure that new standard is properly implemented and launched. And you know, we've recently had wind of that being diluted, and we stepped in with some other charities to highlight how bad and wrong that is, and we've got that stopped. And you know, we're working on bringing a full fat version of that back and being implemented by the government. So you know, a lot of energetic work in the space. This is just a very important subset of that, and it's great to be able to host the Patient Safety Commissioner and a number of interested academics who have input this report on Monday in London.
You mentioned obviously the financial implications here, savings and medication and so on, but even, you know, time savings. You know, if people don't know about appointments and they miss them, that can back things up as well. So there's huge implications, I think, across the board in health here. But do you also think that even though this is, as you said, by NHS England, this could have ramifications around the UK as well? Because, you know, that accessible information issue is across, you know, Wales, Scotland, Northern Ireland as well.
No, absolutely it is. And, you know, we've talked before about the great work our teams and the devolved nations do, because health is a devolved matter. So clearly the Scottish Government, the Welsh Assembly, Northern Irish Assembly have local control over that. But clearly there's a lot of cross-fertilisation between, you know, leading medics, public health officers, etc. And so, you know, a good idea in one part of the UK does quickly get spread into other parts. I've just been actually talking to our Welsh Director Ansley this morning on a couple of matters actually around travel and transport and around accessible voting actually. But again, it makes the point about trying to get things done in one part of the UK that then can be spread across the other. So you're absolutely right. This is important for the UK. Great that we're launching this in England, but we very much hope that, you know, in pushing this and pushing a broader point about accessible information standards and around, that's a UK-wide thing. I think the economics are quite interesting. You just touched on there. I mean, it was a large part of the debate, actually, because the report doesn't talk actually too much to economics. And, you know, I was asking a question amongst others about that, because I think in a world where the government's trying to drive growth, it's, you know, really got challenges on costs. You know, I'm going to come and talk some of the global challenges maybe in a minute economically, but every angle you can find to save money and be more efficient is very relevant. And I think Henrietta Hughes is a lady who's the Patient Safety Commissioner, was giving some horrendous stats, like something like, there's 180,000 beds worth of occupancy from people who should not be in those beds, and they're only there because either they've taken the wrong medicines or we're not giving them the right medicines to go home. And that adds up to something like 15% of the capacity of the health service at any point in time. So you can very, you know, within the context of spending 180 billion quid on the health service, you can see how 15%, you know, over occupancy almost, or occupancy challenge, is making a sizable contribution to the costs. And therefore, if we could get around that, you can see how you can make savings to divert into other sort of frontline services. So yeah, as you say, the economic and safety benefits to the right packaging are absolutely critical.
And we'll stay with economics, Matt. We're, of course, heading into a new financial year. For many charities, they're looking at the implications of, you know, the government's statements, national insurance, all that kind of thing. But also, you know, we hear about tariffs from the US all the time, and that probably doesn't, you don't perhaps tie that up with charities, but there can be a knock-on effect there as well. So going into this new financial year, it is going to be quite challenging.
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of what we knew were to be the challenges from the UK budget from last year and then sort of reaffirmed in the spring statement are baked into our budgets, and we've been cutting our cloth accordingly to absorb the higher national insurance payments and sort of now kick in from this week. We've also got one or two other employment costs going, and you know, clearly there's an employment bill still to land from Angela Rayner that we'll all need to absorb at some point. I think the broader economic canvas on which Donald Trump has just imposed higher tariffs is potentially a really challenging one. And what we haven't got our head around yet is what that might mean for the movement of particular goods and equipment between markets that we work in. Yeah, clearly, we're not exposed to the States in the sense of having goods toing and froing there, but we do import things from other parts of the world, some of our equipment, and we need to have a look at our sourcing routes and to make sure those sources are still secure and haven't been affected by this massive global disruption. And the other thing, which we don't know how this is going to play out, but clearly stock markets around the world down on the back of people believing that this is more likely to lead to a sort of recession, both in the States and globally, than clearly it was before. Whatever Donald Trump's long-term aspirations are to try and bring more wealth back into the US, clearly a global and a national economic context, which is difficult and potentially in a recession, does not make a very happy backdrop for any organisation to thrive and flourish, particularly maybe one like our own, where you're getting those inflationary pressures on costs, people are feeling a pinch, and you're trying to fundraise in those contexts is harder. As I say, inflationary pressures make your costs only go up, not go down. And so, yeah, economically, it would suit us all to have a more benign flow of trade and economic growth around the world. And at the moment, we can see this as being impacted in a negative way at the moment. We'll see how it settles down, but all the advisors or all the commentators I've seen, you know, writing about it this week suggest that it's more likely than not we'll be in a recession globally on the back of this, and that's not a great context for charities to function in.
Another one to wait and see. Let's finish off, Matt, again with economics and politics as well. Of course, we've been talking a lot over the past few weeks and discussing a lot around the government's changes to welfare, particularly for our listeners, things like personal independence payment, universal credit, even things around access to work as well. Still some clarification on some of that we're still waiting on as well, but people quite rightly worried about some of these changes as well. But there is action that they can take, and RNIB can help with that.
Yeah, welfare, sort of green paper, Liz Kendall's proposals came out a couple of weeks back, pre-Trump. The general sense of needing to get the welfare bill down. Clearly some proposals at a relatively high level, which are being consulted on, proposed. And we'll be agitating hard with the DWP. We just had a meeting on it this morning, actually, about what we're trying to do on welfare and on the upside on employment. Because, again, you know, it's a double-edged sword. We're trying to get more people into work to help, you know, offset the welfare bill. But, you know, pushing hard on both. I think just to remind people, if you go on our website and find our social media, there's a link, there's a template for you to fill in and send a letter to your MP. I'm just looking at it now, very simple to follow. You can fill it in a matter of seconds and it'll go to your MP, just allowing people to highlight the impact of the welfare cuts for them and able to very, say, smoothly and efficiently get that point across to your local MP, which will help when it comes to these proposals ultimately going through Parliament. So please do engage with us. As I say, find it on social media or find it on the website, and you can very quickly fill in a format and get it sent through to your MP.
Absolutely, please do. I've done mine. I have a Labour MP. So yeah, very easy to do, very quick to do as well. And as Matt says, if you want to find out more information about that, and indeed lots more on RNIB, do have a look at the website, rnib.org.uk. You can call the helpline on 0303 123 9999, or if you have an Amazon Echo device, just ask Lady A to call RNIB's helpline. Out of time once again, Matt. We'll catch up with you again next week. But thanks for joining us on RNIB Connect Radio.
No, Alan, my pleasure, and good to speak to you. And it's been a challenging week, I think, economically. Let's try and find some brighter topics to talk about next week. But look forward to speaking to you.